Welcome to the At-Large ALS Criteria and Expectation Task Force, taking place on the 14th of August, 2015. On the call today, on the English channel, we have Alan Greenberg, Glenn McKnight, Yurjo Lanspiro, Jacqueline Morris, Ron Sherwood, Cheryl Langdonor, Tijani Benjamin, Chatinian Ramachandran, Mwanda Kiruba, Maureen Hilliard, and Olivia Crepin-LeBlanc. At this time, we have no participants on the Spanish channel. I show no listed apologies for today's meeting. From staff, we have Sylvia Vivanco, Natalie Peregrin, and myself, Terry Agnew. Our Spanish interpreter today is Veronica. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. I also see that Saranush Vardinian has joined us as well. I'll now turn it back over to you, Alan.
Thank you very much. The agenda is posted on the wiki and in the center pod. Is there any comments, questions, or suggestions for change to the agenda? Seeing nothing, hearing nothing, we'll deem it to be accepted as displayed. What I'd like to do today is go over all of the substantive issues and just have a brief discussion, and we have an hour for the meeting. There are essentially six issues of substance to discuss, and plus a few other things. So we can't afford more than, perhaps 7-8 minutes on each item, just to give you a perspective. We're not trying to solve all the world's problems today, but I would like to try to introduce things that other people feel should be on the table for discussion by the groups that will be looking at each item. The first one is something we haven't explicitly talked about until now. It could conceivably be on the table when the external reviewers start looking at us. And the question is, do we want to put on the table for our review the overall concept of RALOs and ALSs, plus the ancillary, what currently are the ancillary individual users, which are currently allowed in 4 of the 5 regions. And I guess I'd like to open the table. Open the discussion. If we were to do something like make a change, that is a very significant change. It's going to require a lot of work. It puts into question perhaps our credibility for having pursued it for the N years that we already have. On the other hand, if we think it's something that will never work, then perhaps now is as good a time as any, and a better time than a few years from now. Anyone have any thoughts? And the thoughts could be, let's run away from it as quickly as possible and not even consider it, or do something more in depth. Tijani.
Thank you very much, Alan. I would say that I think that we don't have to... I don't see any need to change the overall structure of At-Large. If there is an improvement, we can perhaps do improve it in the methodology, etc. But in the structure itself, I don't think we have to change it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? So, Tijani suggests we run away from it and don't consider it. Cheryl.
Thanks, Alan. Cheryl Langdonor for the record. Carlton's not on the call, which is a shame, because he and I served on the Geographic Regional Review working group for many years, and in fact I'm still the chair of that particular entity until we finally get it put to bed and through the final processes of the ICANN board in Dublin, or hopefully even before Dublin. One thing that didn't make the cut for a number of reasons in that report, but was fairly well discussed at least 2 of our public meetings, again, many years ago, that we did talk about some particular benefits of sub-regions, and whilst that's not for discussion in terms of ICANN-wide regional development, I wondered if administratively and to aid engagement and outreach, that if we don't run away, if we put a pin in it and come back later, we might consider, would there be benefit for some form of sub-regional behavioural modelling within some of our RALOs. Asia-Pacific, for example, would lend itself very well to be broken up into at least 5 sub-regions. So that's the sort of thing I wondered if we might think about, perhaps not put it at the highest priority, but just wanted to bring it to the table. Thanks.
I have a question, Cheryl. In your imagining of this, if you look at the GNSO right now, every time we have discussion of GNSO representation on some committee, working group, whatever, or the new community empowerment, we get into the problem that there are too many groups within GNSO to fit the number of people we're typically willing to give them. And that seems to, we'd have the same sort of thing if we had sub-regions. Are we talking about significantly expanding the size of the ALAC?
And also potentially
changing the number, the balance between the regions because there are sub-regions, or would you imagine some other level of addressing it?
Cheryl Langdonor, for the record, Alan, for the short and mid-term future, and so there I'm looking at least a 5 to 10 year plan, I would see no more than a useful exercise for local area networking, for the want of a better term, working as a natural part of the existing RALO infrastructure. It would not necessarily, in fact I can't imagine that it would need to change ALAC structure at all. It may, for example, again using Asia Pacific as an example here, and Maureen and I actually toyed a little with this when we did the review of our rules, but it's something I would want to seriously look at again next time we review our Asia Pacific rules. Is should we have, for example, up to 5 or so sub-regions within Asia Pacific, I would suggest that we would look at having a chair and sub-regional vice chairs, which would be 5 sub-regional vice chairs, and the chair would have to be a independent and demonstrably non-regionally, they can be associated, obviously, they'd have to perhaps come from a region, but they would be the chair, and such things as travel for a vice chair would have to rotate between 5 rather than 2. That's the sort of thing, muddling at the issue within the regional administration, I think would work, and maybe somewhere in the next decade, we might find that all sorts of different things are happening with engagement. But I also think, as you probably should know by now, that this concept of having to have more than, in our case, for example, in the GAC's regional input into many of these committees is ridiculous, and that, you know, you should be able to send, you know, 1 or 2 people to represent large numbers and parts of the organisation. So hope that was a good enough answer for you.
Thank you. I've got a couple of comments, but I'll put myself in the queue. Tijani.
Thank you, Alan. I heard you, Cheryl, and it is legitimate thoughts, especially for the Caribbean sub-region. But I am trying to think about what you are proposing for Africa, for example, and I will see 5 vice chairs from the 5 sub-regions of Africa, or 4 sub-regions of Africa, plus the diaspora, so there are 5 also. And this is this may be useful, but this is also a way to make more how to say, division inside the same community, more, how to say, you remember very well what how Pastor something in Africa had done a lot of trouble, a lot of noise, because he wants to be, he wants to have a position while he don't do anything. And he is using this kind of arguments, the sub-regions. We need more programs, for example, Anglophone, or more people from this sub-region. And this is his argument. This made me a little bit not very comfortable with this. Perhaps we may do it optional for where we need it, but I don't think we need to implement it as a rule for all the regions. Thank you.
If I may, Alan, share off the record, I couldn't agree with you more, Tijani. The mass and complexity of Asia-Pacific is an ideal example where a sub-regional model for internal workings would work very well indeed. But I would fight tooth and nail if you then tried to cleave Asia-Pacific into actual subsections separably. Our strength is in our diversity. But there are real benefits, and in fact I should let you know, although I'm sure that our chair and who's on the call and of course Maureen would let you know as well, that we've over several years been very careful to try and balance the leadership of Asia Pacific across the whole region. So if we have people from the southeast, then we make sure we've got people from the northwest in that leadership team, and hopefully a few from the middle. So it would simply make, in my mind, some of the balancing appropriate for some regions. Why on earth, for example, North America would need to even contemplate having such a thing, I can't imagine.
You see there, Cheryl, I'm going to try to wrest control back of the meeting. You clearly don't understand the divide between Canada and the U.S., if you can even say that.
I wasn't going to be so presumptive, Alan. And in fact, Alan, you might have to have your Anglophone and your Francophile split as well, but I'd leave that up to you all.
I did say I'm going to try to wrest control back of the meeting. I guess what I'm hearing is this may be a useful, although potentially inflammatory way of addressing regional problems, but we're not talking about something on an ALAC-wide basis, and I think, therefore, it is probably off the table for this discussion. What I'm hearing is it would make for a very good way to get cohesive discussions. I haven't heard how one then melds those into a regional perspective. And that I would find a little bit potentially problematic. But I don't think it is on our table. And unless someone strenuously fights for it, I think this has been an interesting discussion, but it's the last one we'll have on it in this particular group. So thank you. The next part is that I'd like to go into the items that we have decided that we are going to look at, and that is particularly the criteria for joining as an ALS and implicitly the criteria which you have to then continue to satisfy. The application process itself, hold on one second. Not the process, but the application form, which may or may not be the same, a subset. Clearly, whatever criteria we establish, we have to ask questions about. But I also wonder to what extent should we look at it as perhaps a process that we have to do later in our overall flow. But it's not necessarily the same people who are going to get involved in that as the people determining what the criteria should be. So my item B, I have a bit of a question mark on. The operational expectations, I think, is a significant part of what we have to do, and that is, how do we make sure that we have engagement? What do we do to both to ensure that we have engagement and make it practical to have engagement. There's no point in setting expectations that are completely unreasonable. The application process, that is, what steps do we have to go through in the process from the time someone submits an application through to approval or rejection of it, and we've had a number of problems over the years with what we're doing right now. And lastly, individual members. We have, right now, we have individual members in 4 out of the 5 RALOs. They have a rather different status in each of the cases. There are issues of on-site participation, that is, travel to meetings on occasion. And although we've said we don't want to focus on that, we've been told a number of times that one of the reasons people form an ALS is because of that situation. So I think we have to face up to it. And the voting issue, similarly, in some cases we have a quasi-ALS. The group acts as an ALS. In other cases, they explicitly do not. And I think we need to, again, decide whether we want to have any common ground or whether this is something that's purely up to a RALO. My recollection, and Cheryl, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the first at-large review did make a statement about individual members across the at-large, did they not?
It was, in fact, a recommendation and now a requirement that individual members must be able to be joining each of the RALOs.
Okay, and so currently satisfied in 4 out of the 5, but with different sets of rules governing them. And
yes,
the question is,
still,
is that something we want to do? So I'd like to open the table now on these 5 items, and with an understanding that perhaps B is not an item which we want to work on in the very immediate future. For ALS criteria, okay, I have some hands up. Are these hands up to discuss the categories or to start discussing the actual substance? First, I'd like to only address issues of our work plan, not the actual issues. So, Tijani, is it to start discussing criteria, or one of the other items, or is it the overall process, overall plan?
It is about the individual members, and the requirement she is speaking about didn't give the level of membership of those individuals. We have a big problem in Africa. People are refusing this kind of membership. And
Tijani, let's defer that discussion till we get to that item.
Okay.
Yeah. Alberto, is if this is about the list of categories that we're going to discuss, fine. If it's to talk about one of the issues, then let's wait till we get to that issue. Alberto, if it's about the categories but not the details of the substance, then please go ahead. All right, I'm assuming we don't have Alberto, or he's not speaking right now. Okay, we're going to go on to the first item of ALS criteria. Now, what you see in the list there are basically the ones that I had put in my original discussion paper, or they're ones that are currently on the books. The current ones on the books are self-funding, mission-related. It implies that you have a mission related to Internet and end users. You must be largely individual-led. That is perhaps the main criteria. You should have a website or other means of disseminating information. We have not talked about, we have not had a criteria of size, but this comes up continually every time we mention whether ALSs are viable or not. And I believe we need a question of why they fit in ICANN, or why they believe they will fit in ICANN, as opposed to simply the Internet Society or something focusing more on the Internet in general, as opposed to within ICANN's remit. So I'd like to open the table, open the floor up to people. Is this the right list? What we're doing is providing some input to the group that's going to refine this. So we don't need to go into huge rationales, but are there items that are missing from here that we want to be the small group that's going to be looking at it to consider and think about? Anyone have any thoughts? Nobody? Tijani, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Alan. I think that the main criteria should be having the Internet users part of their interest or part of their activity. If it is not, they don't have any reason to be in at large. This is the first criteria for me. Second, if we speak about size, we are trying to have individuals members. Now you are speaking about the size. This should be contradictory. You may have the small association, for example, but which is very active and very knowledgeable, and you may have a huge organization that don't do anything and don't have any knowledge or any activity. So this is I don't think we need to enter inside this kind of size extra, but we have to be sure that we have to make it recurrent. The activity of the organization of the ARS should be clear. If there is no activity on the ground, there is no ARS for me. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have Cheryl.
Thanks, Cheryl, for the record again. I agree with Tijani. Sorry, I can't even say your name tonight. It's size would be the one that I'd be least concerned about. I probably would want to see some variable weighting for the group to look at as well, and I too think it is the mission is what's important. My point on size can be balanced by saying whatever constitutes a bona fide organisational structure within the country or domicile that it is in will do. And if that varies country by country, then fine. But most countries and areas have some form of definition, and in many cases it's quite a formal one, of what is an association versus an organisation versus a not-for-profit versus whatever. So whatever description they declare they are, an association, not-for-profit or whatever, as long as that fits with where they're coming from, I think that's all we can look at. And just to answer one of the questions in terms of largely individual-led, in many, particularly emerging and developing economies, people and organisations have a number of roles that they are involved with, and it may be that a prospective at-large structure might not just be purely consumer or end-user focused. It may also have some leadership or activities or interests which may take it into local government or policy making within country or whatever. And so that largely individual-led means that it's not just an organisation of organisations, but it's an organisation of predominantly individuals. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Cheryl. And I put myself in the queue. That last item is something that was hashed over in great detail and for a lot more time than perhaps it should have needed at the time we came up with the original ones. And the current words I think we have are pretty clear, and they're also largely in the bylaws. So I don't think we're likely to change that. And individual-led does not mean that these people don't wear other hats or that there aren't parts of the group which may be government or business or something like that, but they're not the controlling parts. So I think that's well written, and I would be very, very hesitant to change that particular part of the criteria. On the size issue, my concern is we have had cases where an ALS is created, an organization is created to be an ALS, and it never has more than three people in it or four people in it, and with attrition it comes down to one person. And I question whether we can legitimately call it an ALS if there really is only one person who's at the end of the communication channel. Yuria.
Yeah, thank you. It's Yuria Länsipuro for the transcript record. For example, we have ISOC chapters that are ALSCs and ISOC chapters that are not. And here the criteria, I think, is basically those chapters who want to influence things from the inside, within ICANN, from an end-user perspective. That's, of course, why they want to be ALSCs, but at the same time, they also should have a chance to do that, to participate in the process of giving advice. But then this is relates more, of course, to the operational expectations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think I was trying to address that in my last bullet of why ICANN. What's the intersection between what they are interested in and what ICANN does? So, anyone else want to get in on this, or do we remand it eventually to the group? I think just to belabor the point a little bit, I think the issue of size is, I'm not quite sure what the number is. In my mind, I absolutely know that 1 and 2 is too small to be called an ALS, from my perspective. On the other hand, I would not want to differentiate between 15 and 500. So just to make it clear what I'm talking about when I refer to it. Alberto, go ahead.
This is Alberto Soto. Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Alberto Soto speaking. Sorry, but I was muted before. When it comes to ALS criteria, well, in LACRALO, we believe that we should include non-governmental ALSs, and this is what we say when we express ourselves and when we present things. Perhaps that is a missing criteria. I heard that there are people that have different hats within an organization, and they might be in a non-governmental organization, but at the same time, they might be working for a governmental organization. But when they're working within an ALS, they are working for a non-governmental organization. So for us, it should be a non-governmental organization. But this does not imply that, for example, someone working for the government might work for an ALS. When it comes to the number or the size, well, it's quite difficult to determine this. For example, in Haiti, we have an ALS with only 7 members, and this is the only people they have because they have great problems, and this is the same for Latin America and the Caribbean. We have that problem because we have many emerging economies. Most of the countries are emerging economies, so it's quite difficult to have many members participating in one ALS. Thank you.
Tijani.
Thank you, Alan. Alberto spoke about a point very sensitive and very, we don't speak about it in our discussions, which is non-governmental organizations. It seems that I am speaking low. I hope it is better now. I think that the at large has only one interest, which is the public interest. We have to avoid the political interests and the commercial interests. That's why we want the ALSs to be not led by governments and not led by commercial entities. We have to be clear on that. because if we are not clear, we may end up with companies, commercial companies, part of the at large, and we may end with some governmental agencies, member of the at large. I think the main criteria for this issue, for the control of the ALS, should be not controlled by governments, not controlled by commercial interests. Thank you.
Thank you. I put myself in the queue. I heard two different things from Tijani and from Alberto, and maybe I misheard one of them. I heard Alberto saying no government involvement as a government, that, you know, he's not saying that an individual who happens to wear a government hat cannot participate as an individual, but he's saying no formal participation of a government unit. And I heard Tijani say controlled by individuals. And when we set up the original rules, the current ones we're operating on, there was a very significant discussion on that, and the statement was made that in some regions of the world, you have to have some level of government participation, not necessarily in a controlling form, but it might be very awkward in certain regimes, in certain places, to get together without having a nominal participation of a government unit, but that doesn't mean it's controlled by that government unit. And I think we would probably have a problem doing the same thing in changing that rule right now. So I guess I wouldn't mind a little bit of clarity from the two speakers, just to make sure that we're talking the same thing. Alberto, you're next.
Hello, this is Alberto Soto speaking. Alberto Soto speaking. What I said was this, that in La Corralo we have a consensus that an ALS should not be a governmental organization, or a decision-making organization that might create conflicts of interest with end users. But in order to avoid this, it should not be a governmental organization, because for that reason we have the GAC. Of course, we might have one individual who is within an ALS, not as an individual, but participating within an ALS, who might work for the government, but at the same time, that person might also be working within an ALS, which is a non-governmental ALS. We had that case in La Corralo, and we had no problem with that. And the point of view of that ALS, it will never be the opinion of the government, because there are other members involved in that ALS. So that was my comment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Cheryl?
Am I muted?
No,
I'm not muted. I couldn't remember what button I'd last pushed. Thanks, Alan, Cheryl, for the record. I put a Wikipedia quote for non-government in the chat. I wanted to draw everyone's attention to it because it does quite specifically state that an NGO under this category may indeed even be funded by a government, foundation, business or private persons. And I know that in our discussions many eons ago, Alan, those sorts of things were of concern to some of our membership. But the reality in Asia Pacific, in many places in our region, is that some degree of business and indeed often local or regional government will be part of the self-funding model for an organisation which has every right and reason to become an at-large structure. So, again, one of those I will fight tooth and nail for jobs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. I think we've had a good discussion, probably longer than we need to, but this is one of the really critical issues. And I'd like to go on to the, I think we'll skip the ALS question, the application question one for the moment, and go on to operational expectations. The items that I had originally identified are some level of periodic reporting, and again, not a large treaties, but just so we make sure that we have the information up to date and have some idea of what they're doing and that it still fits as an ALS. Because one of the problems we've had over the years is an ALS joins, and then we really have no idea to what extent it continues to exist and is continuing to be a functional unit that if they applied again, would we admit them? And so that's one of the questions. We have said, and again, it's in the current rules, but not very well in the current rules, they have an obligation to disseminate information, to request information back from their users. We have talked a number of times about to what extent should they be required to participate in various activities, be it RALO meetings, working groups, whatever. Advertised participation, again, that's implied in the current rules. They're supposed to tell their members that they're an ALS, something that hasn't always happened in the past. And to what extent can we make sure that we're not talking about just the representative as the ALS, but actually involving other parts of it? Again, not an exhaustive list. But anyone have any thoughts on any of these items? Either should they not be included, or are there things that are missing at this point? And we're not making any decisions right now. I'm just soliciting input. Do we have anyone? Nope. Everyone's happy with the list and we'll go off and work on our own? Okay. The next item is the application process. And for instance, I'll give an example. Dave, is this on the process or on the operational expectations?
This is Dave. I was on the operational expectations. Sorry, I was connecting my audio.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that. This is Dave. Regarding the operational expectations, the reporting, when you say the reporting, is it the reporting to what? The RALOs, the at-large? What exactly did you mean by reporting?
Well, the kind of thing I was talking about is, the requirement to annually, biannually something, clue us in on what your structure is, who's your management, who's in your management structure, what activities are you participating in?
Okay.
That, the group's going to have to come up with that list of things. I did give a bunch of examples in my original thing. It's basically when someone comes up and says, "Hey, you have an ALS in Trinidad. What are they doing these days? Tell us something about them." Or for that matter,
right. Okay.
Make sure we have a current email address. To be blunt.
Okay, got it. I was thinking more, it was more like reporting on the work they are doing within ICANN at large from that perspective. Okay, but now I understand what it means now. Okay, thanks.
Well, I think that could well be part of it and perhaps should be part of it. To what extent we're collecting information independently and we don't need them to report, then fine. If we're collecting participation and being able to relate it back to an ALS, then that may be fine. Right now, if someone joins a working group and they're not the representative whose name we know, we don't even know what ALS they're from. So right now we don't even collect enough information to relate it back to an ALS. So self-reporting would be the only way we could do that, if the ALS even knows, for that matter. One of their members may be actively participating and not even telling them. So I think that's the kind of things that we're going to have to look at and figure out how do we resolve. Anyone else? I see some stuff going on in the chat. Does anyone else want to speak on this? No? Okay. Then the next item is the application process. We've had interesting problems over the years. And I'll give you a very simple one. At various times, we have an ALS apply where they're actually applying before the organization exists. It may be an ISOC chapter that is in the process of forming, but doesn't really exist. You know, and we're told that by ISOC, that yes, there's communication, but they don't exist as a chapter. We have no formal process within our current rules to suspend that application and say, let's wait until something happens. So I think this group is going to be, to some extent, staff-driven in identifying what kind of problems have we had over the years and what do we need to put into the process so it's a robust process that we can manage properly so that we can actually follow our own rules, but at the same time ensure that we don't get bogged down. And we have several people. Tijani.
Thank you. Tijani speaking. I think the formal existence, the or legal existence on the ground is must be one of the criteria, one of the conditions to apply for an ALS position. And now we are asking people if they have the legal.
Have we lost Tijani? Apparently we've lost Tijani. Can
you
I ask
hear me
that?
Now?
Now you're back. Now we can.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you. I was muted, I'm sorry. So I said I think the legal existence on the ground should be one of the criteria and one of the conditions to apply. Now we are asking about the existence of this legal existence, but we are not asking for the proof of it. So I don't remember that we certified an ALS that hasn't an existence, even if it is an ISOC chapter. We always, for ISOC chapter, we always ask the region of ISOC to know if this ALS is actively working. We are not only asking about the existence, we are asking about their real activities. So, but you are right, Alan, perhaps we need to ask for the proof of the legal existence. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. I'll introduce a point of order, not a point of order, but a clarification. We do not ask for legal existence right now. The rules very explicitly say you do not have to be a legally existing entity. The reason for that is in some parts of the world, it is exceedingly complex and exceedingly expensive to create a legal entity. And again, this was one of the issues that was discussed heavily, and requiring legal existence, that is a formal corporation, is something that we very, very carefully said we do not need. If some regions are asking for legal existence, and I know that has been raised on occasion, that is incorrect, and that is in violation of our rules. And I think that's one of the things we need to clarify. There are parts of the world where legal existence is very, very expensive and time-consuming. So I don't think we can put that as a rule. Certainly it's up for grabs for discussion, but I would be very reluctant to see it go forward like that. But that doesn't mean that it shouldn't have existence in terms of reality of being a group that does have process, does have rules, does have ongoing activities, and that's very different from legal existence. In any case, Alberto, you're next.
This is Alberto Soto speaking. Thank you very much, Alan. In Lagrallo, what we do is this. We have a plan to engage ALSs, and when they ask us, we make a difference between formal existence and legal existence. So we ask them to have bylaws, and when they can fill in the application form, they should send that bylaws. And even if it is not legally approved, this is a formal certificate or a formal proof for the association. In many countries in the Caribbean region, this is very expensive, and it is sometimes very difficult to obtain the legal existence, and the process is very long. Perhaps it might take 2 years to get the legal existence. So what we ask them is to show the formal bylaw or the formal bylaws approved by their board of directors, for example, or their association, and with that, we can work together. Thank you.
Thank you, Alberto. Again, the details, you know, we may well want to, we will have to be fleshing out. So exactly what level of existence do are we requiring? Olivier.
Thanks, Alan. Olivier Kafanabon speaking. And on the topic of legal incorporation, it is worth noting that in the ALS application, we do ask whether they are legally incorporated or not.
Yeah, Olivier, can you speak up? You're very hard to hear.
The mic is a little further. Can you hear me better now?
Not really.
Not really. I've got the mouth about a centimeter in front of my mouth. That doesn't help.
Do your best.
I try louder.
That's good.
Excellent. My neighbors must feel it's great as well. Sorry to my neighbors. Apologies. Okay. I'll have to ask for another dialogue afterwards. Okay, just to say, on the subject of legal incorporation, it is put in the application form whether they are legally incorporated, et cetera. And indeed, when one is looking at accepting an ALS or not, we can always make up our mind as to whether we think that's enough or not enough. And I think it just comes as a package with all of the other commitments that the ALS binds, well, somehow, I wouldn't say binds itself to, but says they will proceed forward with. So I don't think we should be looking at this in a specific way or change anything to it. That's it.
Okay.
And I'll ask for a new dial out.
Thank you, Olivier. Anyone else want to get in on this one? We're starting to approach the end of our time. So I'm quite happy if we finish this item. The last item is individual users. I don't want to get into, in this call, how the various regions treat it, but I think the group looking at this is going to have to look at the various options, four different options we have, and they're all somewhat different, and decide to what extent do we want at large wide rules, to what extent do we want flexibility within the regions, and, you know, all the other questions that go along with it. It's quite clear from our original process, and I suspect it's going to come out of this the second review, that the requirement to create an organization to be allowed to contribute is something that we probably do not want to tie ourselves to. And I'll give myself as perhaps the best example. You know, I've been willing to put a lot of time into At Large. If I hadn't been named by the nominating committee originally, I might not have ever started, because I wouldn't likely have tried to go join a club and then rise in its ranks to be the spokesman for it. I probably just would have found something else to do with my life. So I think it's something that we do need to consider carefully. Anyone want to get in on this one right now? As I said, it's not an opportunity today to go into it in depth, but I do think we're going to have to look at it, and clearly we have to do better than we have been to date on this. All right. In terms of the structure going forward, I would like to suggest that we use the concept that was very successfully used by the CWG stewardship, and that is design teams. The group can be as small or large as the interest is, with one person leading it and taking responsibility for reporting back. and work going on in mailing lists, teleconferences if necessary, and reporting back within a small amount of time, that is initially within a week or two, to try to get just something for the whole group to discuss. The only real question we need to answer in the short term is, number one, do we use the standard mailing list for everything and flag subject lines to say which design team is it, or do we want separate mailing lists? Anyone have any strong feelings on this? I can live with both. I think to start with, we could use the single mailing list unless the traffic starts getting unreasonable.
Single is my preference, Cheryl.
We have two singles. Anyone want to speak for multiple? As I said, something we could move to if indeed we have to, but I wouldn't. Okay, everyone says single. That decision's made.
Multiple for Tijani.
Multiple for Tijani. You're odd man out at the moment, based on about six people typing in single, maybe eight. So we'll keep it single for the moment. I'll propose a flagging way that we can look at it and go forward on that. We're going to want to have someone to lead each of these processes, and we're looking at four of them right now. I would suggest that if you have an interest in leading one or more of them, then contact me privately, and if we have multiple people, we'll figure out a way to resolve it for any given design team, and if we don't have any, then I will identify someone to try to get to volunteer. Is there anything else we need to discuss today? I'm going to be moving forward on what I just described over the weekend, so if you do have an interest in leading, please let me know soon. Otherwise, I will reach out. And is there anything else anyone wants to discuss, or we can leave a few minutes early?
Alan, Cheryl here.
Cheryl, go ahead.
I was just wondering, on behalf of those of us in the more Pacific part of Asia-Pacific, if any of these calls are going to be other than between midnight and 2 a.m. on our Friday nights, or actually now Saturday mornings.
The answer is yes.
Thank you.
You have a good reason to wonder that, and we will be doing a doodle. Sorry, I at the last meeting we said we'll hold the next meeting at the same time, but after that we'll do our best to rotate. I don't think that doodle has gone out, but it will be.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for reminding me. Anyone else, the last word before we adjourn for the day? Nope. Okay. Thank you all for attending. Thank you for those who are attending on their Saturday or very late Friday. And I wish you a good weekend all. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Alan. Bye.
Bye.
Have a good weekend. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.